Probably looks like a Marby or Chol, and we've got Josh Caddy that's available to play in that role as well. He trained well and strongly again today, so we've got an ideal look that it may be.
All right, so that's Damien Hardwick talking about some replacements, possible replacements for Tom Lynch, who Richmond announced yesterday would be missing the first final against Brisbane. They're very early to do it. On the front foot, early doors, Rocket E, welcome to you.
Morning, Daniel. How are you, mate?
Going very well. Thank you. Nice to have you with us again on a beautiful Melbourne morning. That's something we don't see too often. Or in finals, does it happen a bit more, Rocket, where we rule out our stars a bit earlier than normal?
No, I was just thinking about that myself, that normally as a coach you keep that to the last minute. You make a last-minute change. You'll name them. Which is always a psychology ploy more than anything. I wonder whether they think, oh, we'll name that early, so therefore if there's any little doubt about Andrews, well, he won't play either, so they'll actually not get him to play.
Oh, flush him out.
Yeah, so therefore, whether it's that's their ploy, I would have thought, to try and hopefully Brisbane don't play Andrews, so therefore it evens it up, rather than if they'd named Lynch, therefore they would have named Andrews. I don't know. But it's not very usual that teams do that.
That's a very good way of thinking. This is why he's the best in business, Whitey, because I would never have thought of trying to flux the opposition selection out with your news.
Well, see, I want to take that a little bit further, Rocket. When that sort of thing happens, so say you're in the Brisbane camp, does it make any difference at all? I mean, obviously he's one of their really good players, but when a player is missing, I mean, are they doing cartwheels in the meeting room planning this match, or with the way Richmond plays, it only makes a minimal difference?
Oh, I think it's somewhere in between. I think it would make a bit more than a minimal difference from Brisbane's point of view, because of the what Lynch can do. Like, he can have bad games, but he can kick two or three quickly in 10, 15 minutes to swing the momentum. Also, having that height factor, say Andrews doesn't play, they don't. Chol may be there, but he may kick one or two. But he's not going to have the ability to kick five or six. So I think that is just Riewoldt, and they can put all their attention to Riewoldt. So I don't think both teams are either one man teams. But by the same token, I think Brisbane would be more pleased that he's not playing rather than playing.
Because it made me think about this with the news coming out yesterday. Who is Richmond's most important player? Who is the one player, and this is to both of you, who is the one player that, not so much they can ill afford to lose, but the one that they would not want to lose the most?
Yeah, it's a good question. I suppose history has shown that Martin doesn't play, they tend to struggle a bit because he can turn games. So if you put him to one side, because that's an obvious one.
I'm Nick Foster.
Yeah, I was going to say Grimes or Vlosten would be the one, I reckon. Mm. I reckon Grimes probably, because he can play on both talls and smalls. Just especially with Asprey out, and I know Bolter's done very well, but I think it just maybe unbalances their defence a little bit.
It's an interesting question too, because we've seen throughout the season, haven't we, that they've been without a lot of their really important players and stars, and they've still been able to do what they've done. Presty has been one of their biggest and best big game players for a couple of years. Shane Edwards, I thought, was one of their real critical players up in the last 12 months or so, 18 months or so, and hasn't been there, and they've still been able to do it. So it's sort of hard to pinpoint. Dusty's obviously the obvious one, as Rocket says, and life's difficult without Dusty because he's such an extravagant athlete. He's amazing. But I would least like to lose, if I was Damien Hardwick, I'd least like to lose Nick Foster. Not that they say it's going to affect our performance and we're going to lose, but I think he's really one of the pillars that they build their game around.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting for the whole final series. Teams, and we mentioned last week about the injuries and how much they're going to impact. And I think it'll impact more this year than any other year. So, and with the compressed season and that, there'll be some players, well, obviously there will be, but probably more than other years, carrying little niggles or fatigue at certain parts of their legs and so things. So whether the soft tissues open up, so especially now the increased speed of the game. So it'll be interesting to see how teams cope with it.
So while we're on that game, Rocket, and we've built up to that one this Friday night at the Gabba, we've talked about the Brisbane Lions in the last week or so and whether or not they're better placed having been through what they went through last season. Obviously, a straight sets exit from the Lions. They emerged from nowhere last year and they finished top four and all of a sudden they were out in straight sets. What do they learn from that? Are they better placed because of that experience, do you think?
I think the way they've performed this year, yes, they are better placed. I think they've handled that really well because they've had a far better season, so I think they're more mature. Their biggest issue for the last 2 years, aside the last two games in the finals, was kicking straight. Yeah. That hasn't been rectified. So that cost them last year against Richmond, even though Richmond looked a better side, the scoring shots weren't much different. So they've got to do it. But I think they've matured. I don't think it'll be a weight for them to carry. I think playing at home is going to be an advantage. Richmond are a different side with some injuries and players out, so it'll give them a really good chance and a really good side to be able to win the game. So if Lynch, obviously not playing, if Andrews does play, I think it swings a little bit their way. But I'm still favouring Richmond, but I think what could happen on that question, Half, is if they lose it, does that then become a millstone?
Yeah.
That they've the media and jump on and say, well, they lost two last year, they lost this one, they've got to win a final. If they don't win a final, it's two wasted years, etc., etc., etc. So that could become a bit more pressure if they lose this week.
So how do you play that this week if you're Chris Fagan, knowing that might and probably will come if they do lose? And let's be honest, it wouldn't be an embarrassment to lose to a generational team like the Tigers, but they want to win it. How do you play that if you're Chris Fagan this week leading up into this game? Do you mention that sort of stuff?
Well, I don't think
last year?
No, I don't think you mentioned it at all. No, I think you're more on the situation where we're a better side. We've proved we've won more games. We finished second on the ladder for a reason, etc., etc. So it's more about the way we play. Look at Richmond. I think they've lost so many games to Richmond now that they need to address that, as in their preparation, their homework they do. They can't just say, oh, we'll just play our way, because that's not going to totally work against Richmond. You need to know what they do, how they move the ball, where we need to put pressure on, how we stop Riewoldt, what Martin does. When we get the ball, to give ourselves a chance of scoring, do we use the corridor a little bit more? Do we still use the boundary? Whatever they need to have a plan to go in to be able to beat Richmond.
We were talking about this yesterday, Rocket, about who is the number one seed going into the final series. Now, the obvious thing to say is Port Adelaide, because they finished the home and away season on top, but obviously it doesn't necessarily mean that. Going into the series, is it Port Adelaide the team to beat, or do you think it's Richmond, Brisbane, because they've got the home final advantage the whole way through? Who would you be looking at as the team to beat?
I think it's Richmond. I think Richmond are the one. I think there's still a little question mark on the others. The only question mark I've got on Richmond is the fitness of guys. You know, having Lynch out and then there's Bolt and Prestia come back, how fit is Prestia? Well, like, we know he's a good player, but there's still just that little, that's the only doubt I've got on them, and it's very minor. So Richmond for me are the team to beat. They win this week, a week off, I think they'll be cherry ripe, so I think they're the team to beat. I think the Port Geelong game will be an interesting one about where they're at, both teams, because there's a bit of question mark on both sides.
Mm. So we spoke to Luke Beveridge yesterday and we talked about sort of themes through the year and how you get your players up, and do you start treating them differently once you get to a final series compared to a home and away season in what you say and how you train them. What's your view going into a final series? Do you try and keep it as normal as possible? Do you have to funk it up a little bit to try and get a response from the players, or is that just naturally going to happen because you are in a final series?
I think it's naturally going to happen. I think you just got to read the group. I mean, some groups might be more anxious, so you just really got to bring it down. Might be more pressure because of history, whether it's say in Brisbane's case. I think you just got to read the group. If it's an experienced campaigners, say in Richmond, they'll probably just get themselves up. If you read a group that they are, for whatever reason, a bit flat, well, you might need to razz it a little bit, I suppose, or a theme up. But it depends on your own coaching. If you have themes during the year, like I hear that Luke's got themes, he'll probably build up to a theme that he's had and probably just keep that the same. So they buy into that. So it really depends on your group and what you believe in. I wouldn't think that any of the teams would be really now to have the bells and whistles and try and motivate them externally, I suppose, if it's the right phrase. Because I think they're right for a final series. They know where they're at. I think they'd be excited about going to the final series. Probably Collingwood's place, probably looking forward to the end of the season with all the trouble they have.
Yeah, well, that's true. What about the final series? I mean, there's conversations in the last couple of days about the pre-finals bye, Rocket, which was brought in a couple of years ago because your type, you coach people, decided to rest 15 players in the last round when things were secure and nothing could be affected. And the game didn't like that look, Rocket. It questioned the integrity of the competition to a degree, and Melbourne Storm went through a similar conversation across the weekend as well with Craig Bellamy dropping 12 players or managing 12 players from his lineup because nothing could change. And now it seems to be the motion is about having a week off so we can get the players best prepared for the finals campaign. We've got the best players out there at the biggest time of year. Does it matter why we have it, the bye, and is it a good thing in your eye?
Yeah, it's a good question. You hear a lot of arguments both ways. I'm not strong on either way, to be honest. I can understand getting players fresh and you get your best players available. Some people have recommended have the bye before the grand final. Don't have a bye until, so you've got your two best teams have got a week off.
That's what the NFL
does. Yeah, so that's not a bad idea. The integrity of the competition argument with, I think it was North Melbourne, wasn't it, a few years ago?
Yeah,
maybe
Freo
as well.
Well.
Yeah. And I think that's just an anomaly of the competition, just where they bring a rule in. You can't make more than six changes unless you make an application and justification for it. So I'm not here nor there. I think a lot of people missed the footy on the weekend, would have liked to have had it. Yeah, six and one half a dozen the other for me. I think teams, I can see the merit of getting players fit. So teams like West Coast and Richmond would be advantageous with it. You know, we'd like that having. If we didn't have the week bye, I don't know how Collingwood could get to Perth. I suppose that game would be played in Queensland then. You know, they'd change the game around.
Yeah, things possibly changed. Is it? Because that's the other part of the conversation, Rocket, is that you work all year, all season long, however that long that season is, 17 or 22 games, and you give yourself a position to be a top four team and earn that double chance, and maybe that's dissipated because of that, the fact that you have to rest a week. You lose momentum, the other team gets a chance to get a healthier list, and it takes away any sort of advantage that you seemingly might have coming into a finals campaign.
Yeah, and that's a fair point as well. I suppose the first year they had it, the Dogs highlighted that by them minimising the advantage of a top four side. But 17, 18, 19 have all been top four teams have won it. Back to normality. That's a fair point too. It does dilute the advantage of a top four side. But if you're good enough, you'll win it anyway. So I don't know if it's a compelling argument either way. I think there is some points either way. Do they count each other out? I'm not really strong either way.
So whether it's West Coast with the players that they've got coming back from injury that might be a little bit underdone, Dion Prestia at Richmond's another example of someone that looks like he's going to come in for a final series having not played pretty much all year. Did you ever go through examples of that into a final series where it's really playing on your mind whether you play someone because it's a final and the risk attached to that? And if you had your time again, would have you done things differently? Were you more like someone that would err on the side of caution in that scenario?
I think a quality player, I think you play. The one that sticks out for me was, he was only young, was Sean Higgins. Played the final against, must be the first final against Geelong 2008. I think, no, the second, no, the preliminary final, sorry, the preliminary final, Geelong 2008, and Sean had smashed his ankle 12 weeks earlier or something. He trained really well, and we knew a quality player, and it was just a toss-up, but we decided to go with him, and he did quite well. He did quite well. You just got to monitor whether his fitness levels are far as seeing the game out, that individual, but generally you'd, I think if you've got a few going, coming back, that's that becomes an issue. But if you've just got one, and you see how they train, you know the individual, I think it's a case by case. Obviously, they've got a lot of confidence in Prestia. He's mentally tough. He'll be able to, probably he'll run out of gas a little bit, so they'll probably interchange him a little bit more. But Bolton's coming back. He's missed a few weeks. Caddy's only been back for one game. They had a bye. So there's a few there that are a little bit underdone match fitness, but it's just how they monitor them. If they get an injury, a player goes off or a concussion, that adds another layer to it, doesn't it? That puts the load then on those players. So that's the risk you take.
A bit happening there. And the West Coast Collingwood one, Rocket, we found out yesterday, Mark McGowan, the Premier of WA, decided that because Collingwood are only having a 7-day quarantine, they are considered a dirty team in terms of biosecurity protocols. And if West Coast lose, they'll have to quarantine for 14 days in their own state, not allowed to do anything inside their house for 14 days because Collingwood are dirty. It's Adam Simpson said on the back of that, it's a good incentive to win.
it is a good incentive to win. It's a strange one. Well, if he thought they're a dirty side, why would he let them in the state and not get them to quarantine for 14 days, which means they'd have to play in Queensland? But if he thinks they are a dirty side or an unclean side, why let them in? It doesn't make sense. It seems maybe a bit of intention seeking, I think, but which is a bit of a shame, but it's a bit. It is a bit of an incentive for West Coast, but they might be able to have Mad Monday. They have a mad fortnight away, won't they? You know, but go and rest at home for 2 weeks. So it's strange, very very odd.
They'll be hoping that Mad Monday's not for another couple of weeks. The West Coast Eagles, if they can get through the first one. You talk about injuries and managing them and getting them right after that week. I mean, it does give them a chance, probably more than any other team, to get a few players back that weekend off last weekend, Rocket, because they've had such trouble in the back end of the season with their list.
Yes, they've had a lot of players out. Obviously, Yo's out for the season. I heard yesterday that, I don't know what the Simpsons said, but a West Coast correspondent said they'll all be right. And I can't believe McGovern. Anyway, there'd be, you know, got to be a query on McGovern. Kennedy went off that ankle. That was 2 weeks ago. But then there's Sheed, isn't there? Did he play?
Shuey.
Yeah, so they're going to have a few, aren't they, that question mark on. So That's their dilemma. So if McGovern didn't play and Kennedy didn't play, it really throws it back to take that disadvantage of Collingwood of being quarantined for 7 days, takes that, actually dilutes that a bit and swings it back in a bit Collingwood's favour.
I'm going to be really interested in how that game plays out because there are going to be West Coast Eagles players that are underdone, so they won't want the game necessarily played quickly. They want to be able to get in front and control the game, take the pace out of it and look after their players. Collingwood's got a real opportunity. And look, they have struggled all year to score, except for potentially round one against the Dogs. But if they can get off to a fast start and make West Coast play quick, it really, I think, advantages the Magpies significantly with these players that are going to be underdone. They'll want to be managing them through games, slow ball, all that sort of stuff. Collingwood need to start well, and if they do, they're right in this game.
No doubt, and they have been up until the last month. They have been an excellent first quarter team. Collingwood have scored on an extraordinary percentage of their goals in the first quarter. Like it's 40% or to 50% of their goals they get in the game as the first quarter. Some, even when they kick 5 goals out of 8 some games, like in the first quarter, they start really well. So they can get off the fly, and they're capable of doing that. West Coast then have got to chase, as you say, so do their energy levels. The only thing with West Coast, if they do get in front, Adam, and we've spoken about this a fair bit, they love to play the chip catch game, take time off clock, and they don't do it really well against good sides. It lets the others back in the game. So if they do that, I reckon that'll suit Collingwood as well. Collingwood will get the ball back off them. So, but I think they believe in themselves in that area of the game. I don't think they think they're bad at that. But they don't score when they do that. They won't score against Collingwood if they do that. They won't score. So that will give Collingwood an opportunity.
Well, I think we've said this a few times this year, which just sort of goes against my argument in a point, but the Eagles' best football's been played when they have got behind and they have had to actually start to play up tempo. And, you know, Geelong's the classic example. I still think probably the best game, or certainly in top three best games of the year, where Geelong got out in front and the Eagles had to play fast football to get over the top of them, and that was a really high-quality match. But I just think in this situation with the players the Eagles have got out or have had out, they'd want to be controlling the tempo of the match to look after their players. So they can't do that if you're behind on the scoreboard.
No, for sure. There's probably some, but you've got to be mindful. You don't tell the players that because it'll seek in subconsciously, the fact we'll get fatigued. I think they've got to attack the gun. They just can't afford to let Collingwood be 3 goals up a quarter time. So if it's a nil or draw at quarter time, West Coast will be okay. But if they do the other way, they've got to chase the whole game then, and the fatigue levels can kick in.
Great to have Rocket Ead with us on a Tuesday morning, 27 past 7. We'll get to a break, Rocket. Stick around. There's plenty more still to come from our list of items to discuss with you in Coach's Corner. Some news coming through in the world of basketball, just in terms of coaching as well. Adrian Wojnarowski of the Woj Bomb, ESPN senior NBA insider, says Doc Rivers is out of the Clippers after their loss in the Western Conference semifinals earlier this month. Doc is gone from the Clippers. So not unusual to see some changing in the NBA at the end of a season. Doc Rivers, one of the most famous NBA coaches, is very, very good in a new series on Netflix as well, The Playbook, if you're into coaching. Very good little series, that one. A couple of episodes into that. He's gone from the Clippers, says the Woj Bomb. He never gets it wrong. 27 past 7, Rocket never gets it wrong either, and he'll get it more right after this.
Across this sporting state, RSN 97's Breakfast Club.
There's no doubt he was probably a little bit disappointed with how he went last time, but as I touched on before, the ball that Tom was getting, there's no doubt that it made his job a lot easier than what we made Clusters.
That is the voice of Tom Rockliffe from Port Adelaide, talking about Tom Cleary and his performance against Tom Hawkins. A lot of Toms in that conversation. Last time Port Adelaide met Geelong, where Tomahawk went berserk, had heaps of space to work in, and Geelong did an absolute number on Port Adelaide Rocket. They get a chance to redeem the power on Thursday night at the Adelaide Oval in Final 1 of the 2020 series. We were talking about this yesterday with Jim, I think. Would you like to be Ken Hinckley this week, knowing what's happened to you last time, knowing what you are as a footy team and being able to last the journey of 17 weeks and be the best, and being able to have a forensic analysis of why you got beaten that day in a week off? Would you like to be Ken Hinckley this week coaching against the ever all-conquering Cats?
Yes, I would, no doubt. I think I think they'll learn from last time. I think playing at home, most people would probably 50, but probably think Geelong will win after last time's performance. They've got to change some things. I think he's smart enough to be able to change that, especially defensively on Hawkins, as you said. That ground suits that contested ball because it's narrow ground. They've got some bigger bodies in their midfield. I think they can win, to be honest. I think they can win, and I think, you're going, the top of the ladder, so it brings its own a little bit of pressure in your hometown. But I think that's outweighed by the other factors we spoke about. And I think they can win, and I think they'll be up and about. Yeah, I think I'd certainly like to be in Ken's shoes, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I reckon it's a good place to be. When you know what's happened, they've given you their best. It didn't really matter. Grand scheme of things, it didn't really matter that game. Psychologically, it might down the line, who knows. But home, best team in the business, and they've embraced this Whitey through the year about being the best and wanting to win the flag. So they won't shy away from it or be nervous about it, because they've been really public about their desires all year long. I reckon it's a really exciting opportunity for Port Adelaide this week.
And I think they'll treat it that way. Ken Hinckley hasn't been afraid to talk about winning a premiership in their 150th year. Hasn't been scared in saying, we think we can be the best team in the competition. And I think the players have really responded positively to that. So I don't think necessarily the occasion will get the better of them. It's just, for me, it is a question of whether that performance did scar them or whether they've learnt from it. They have them another opportunity back at home and they'll be different. I got a feeling Port Adelaide have really lifted in recent weeks. When they played Geelong, it was just off the back of they'd beaten Richmond the week before, and I just wonder whether they had a bit of a lull the week after because it was talked about as being some of the best football played all year. I just reckon they got Geelong at the wrong time. So, I'm prepared to forgive a little bit.
Yeah, I think they've got two things that they've just got to just to tinker with. One is how they play Hawkins, and how they do defend aggressively up the ground. So they defend within a kick of the ball, their numbers, so their defenders will come off their men. So that leaves a lot of space. So therefore, their defender, on Hawkins, was told to play in front.
Yep.
Geelong were able to get through that maze of players, and then that it exposed Cleary and then Jonas. So I think they need to change that a little bit, not be as aggressive, and maybe just hold back an extra 5 metres or so, and then maybe play back shoulder, as Brian Lake tweeted at the time. And I think going inside 50, they went to Dixon all the time, and they bombed it a fair bit.
Yeah.
And so Geelong are the best at rolling off and supporting in the air. So they had one body him and another one come over, even sometimes three players there. So he was no chance, and he had no run at the footy. They stopped his run at the ball. It wasn't so much the spoiling, which they were able to do really well. He wasn't able to launch. He wasn't able to get his hands up. So they were able to block his run. So they need to be able to pick better options and go to different targets at different times to take the pressure off Charlie.
Half, it's. I think it's important to note that Port Adelaide haven't lost since they lost to Geelong in round 12. So that was their last loss they had. But to sort of counter that a little bit, of all the wins they had in the lead up to the finals, none of those were against teams playing in the finals.
Yeah.
So they had done their heavy lifting. Now, they only lost 3 games for the year. They were to Geelong, Brisbane and St Kilda. But while we think they've improved a lot, except for they played Collingwood. Damn it! I'm really flat about that.
You were close. You were close.
Well, Collingwood just leaped in anyway, didn't they?
Yeah, we're only eighth. It doesn't matter.
They just snuck in. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but I think, as I said, they haven't lost since Geelong, so I think they're better, but I'm not sure they're better because I don't think they've been fully tested. Collingwood certainly came at them in the third quarter, and we've talked about that a lot, and they definitely responded, but it wasn't against a high-quality opposition, which clearly, Geelong is.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. I think, though, the Collingwood game, Collingwood had a lot to play for. It was a little bit damp, so... Yep. And so a lot more contest, which probably suited Port more, but I thought they answered those challenges really well. I actually came away from that game thinking, I think they're a good chance in the finals. The way they were able to weather the storm, they kicked away early, they played some good footy. And they've got some players to come back in. They had a couple of players that won't, so probably three players to come back in. So I think they're primed. I think they're okay. I think they're that last game really primed them for the finals. They've had good games. You said they haven't lost. They've got confidence, got some players to come back in. So there's no excuses for them playing at home. So, there's no excuses for them.
Rocket, yesterday we learned of the announcement that Hunley Bunnell has retired from AFL football. He's been a well-talked-about player since his time in the game. The 2010 National Draft, of course, he was pick number 2 to the Gold Coast Suns, and he's had... Well, some challenges along the way. 81 games at the Suns, 2 games at Fremantle, and 5 in the end this season at the D's. Just in terms of pure talent, what have you seen from him? Where does he rank in terms of pure talent working with a guy like Hunley Bunnell?
Oh, certainly up there. If he'd had some luck with his body and also be able to apply himself consistently like the really good players have been able to do, I would have thought he would have been up there with some exceptional players. His touch, his vision, his ability to kick it, and his running ability was enormous. Like, he was a quintessential 400-metre runner where he'd get a possession in the back pocket and be able to run up the length of the ground and kick a goal, to get on the end of it. So his ability, he was an exceptional talent. He was an exceptional talent. He can mark the ball. Wasn't a really strong player. But yeah, he just unfortunately his calves didn't allow him. Even I could tell this year, and I was a bit disappointed he couldn't get another contract because he'd built into it, I would have thought. But he'd lost that bit of zip with his calves, obviously working his way through. Probably only got five games. That he just didn't have that run that he had before. But I would think that that's just was just building his body up to be able to go next year. But unfortunately, happened what happened last weekend and last week, and he's not going to be playing again. So it's a bit of a shame, really, because he's an exceptional talent.
There's not too many players that can have 38 disposals and kick four goals in a game. He did that in 2012. And he kicked six and had 27 against Geelong in a win in 2014 as well. Like, his best was sublime. And his ability to impact games, remember, Rocket, was sublime.
I remember 2015. He missed a couple of weeks. I don't know if it was an injury or an indiscretion. but he came back and played in Adelaide, and he had 38 or 39 and kicked four in 2015. So he's an exceptional talent, and what he could do. So it's a bit of a shame that for football in general, but certainly for him, that that it couldn't go to the next step.
I remember Kenny Hinckley saying, around that time, around that 2012 time when he'd been at the Gold Coast Suns as an assistant coach, that he was the most talented player he'd ever seen, and it was sort of a comment that stuck in my mind, and it's a shame. I mean, it would appear that it's the end now, that we it just seemed that the fairy tale story was going to be once he started to get his body right, that he was going to become a more dependable player, just being out there and playing, that he was going to be good for Melbourne. So that's a shame. Now, the situation with Brad Crouch, what does a coach get involved in that at all? When a player has had this scenario where he's been essentially busted with recreational drugs. Is that just a footy manager thing, or does a coach get involved in that situation? How does that unfold behind the scenes?
I've never been involved with that. I think when guys test positive, nobody knows at the club. I think now the doctor may know, but certainly as a coach you don't know. So I never knew any of the period of time that I was coaching if players were on strikes or not. So being busted like that, obviously a very public thing. So I would think it was the coach would be across it, whether he's in decision-making. It'll be up to the individual club, but he'd be certainly acutely aware of where it sits and what the information is and what's going to happen police-wise. And then if it comes to a trade situation, obviously the coach is going to be involved in that. So they need to make positive decisions for the club.
Do you think it will have an impact on a club saying yes or no to him coming to their footy club next year? Do you think it affects their trade value, the amount of money he gets, all those sorts of things, this particular incident? Or do you think it just, doesn't make any difference at all?
It's got to make some difference. I don't think it'll make a difference. Certainly clubs have got to ask questions. They've got to sit back now and not jump in. That'll be one. I'd imagine being caught with this would have to be a strike. No one's said about that, but I imagine it would be. So therefore, he gets another strike, or if he's already had one, I don't know if he has, but that puts a whole new complexion on it, doesn't it? So that you bring a player in with one, he's got one strike, if that's the case, he wouldn't want to get another one, because then he may miss 12 weeks or whatever it is, or 2 years or whatever the penalty may be. So that's got to come into their thinking. They've got to then test his character and ask him and a whole range of different things. And certainly Brad Crouch has got to mature to say, well, I can't afford to go anywhere near this stuff again. I don't think it's a clear-cut yes or no, Adam, but by the same token, if they were definite red-hot on him, whichever club is, they would have to ask questions and they would have to do more homework. I don't think it'll stop them taking him, but they'd have to uncover some more information.
Yeah, it's a fascinating scenario. If there is a prior, you're right, Rock, I hadn't thought about that. Another one on top of that certainly makes it a difficult decision for a club perhaps wanting to secure his services. Well, speaking of securing services, there's a few players that have been talked about at the moment. Adam Sard is one of those at the Bombers. Rocket seemingly met with the Blues a couple of times in the last couple of days. Is he the sort of player the Blues need?
Oh, yeah, he'd be exceptional for them. Yeah. I think most teams, and I couldn't believe at the time he left the Suns, and I had a little bit to do with Adam, and spoke to him a few times, that there weren't other clubs interested in him then. I'd spoken to a couple of clubs for him, and they were going down another path, and I couldn't believe that they wouldn't even contemplate him. But he's played 61 of 62 games or whatever it is. Not only does he give them run and carry off the half-back, he beats players one-on-one and taller players. And his ability to mark the ball and spoil, he's turned into a really, really good player. And I think if he went to Carlton, now they can play Williams there, and obviously they want to play Williams in the middle, but having Doherty there just as a replacement for Simpson and some speed, and he can use the ball well, which Carlton at times do turn it over. I think he'd be a great get. I think he'd be a great get for most clubs. So I think Adam will take his time. He's a deep thinking young man, and he'll make a decision what he thinks best for himself.
Are you nervous if you're a Bombers person at the moment? Danaher's obviously not committed yet, and who knows where that leads. And you've got Saad, who's looking elsewhere. You've got Fantasia, who's open for movement again. I think the club might be as well, but it's some of your key playmakers, when things are going well, those three are pretty prominent, and they may not be there.
I mean the rumblings you hear, it's only through media that I'm hearing, is, you know, there's a bit of smoke, isn't there? There's a bit of restlessness. Teams are going after Zach Merry. He's got a year to go on his contract, so obviously Essendon control that. But that, if that continues on, does that go for 12 months' time? So there's some things there they've got to be concerned. Danaher one's interesting. I'm not as concerned if I'm a Bombers person. I'd go the other way and say, listen, give us an answer by the end of the week. Joe, you know, you've been in a state of flux for 2 years. We need to know. Saad, I'd be worried about. I'd want to get him signed up. But you don't want to pay overs for anyone as well, because you don't want to preclude trying to get someone in to bolster your squad at the same time. Fantasia's had a lot of injuries. If he goes, he goes. So I don't think that's too big a loss either, to be honest.
All right, well, it's a bit to play out in that sense, and obviously a bit to play out in an on-field sense as well this week, the first week of the finals. We cannot wait to see how it unfolds, Rocket, and talk to you next Tuesday morning all about it. We appreciate the time, pal. Thank you.
Thanks, boys. Have a good week.